can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey.
And I'm your co-host, Sarah.
And today, our first film, they say this at the beginning of the film, at least like the previews before it started in the theater I went to, and that it's been 14 years since the last one.
Okay.
Which makes me feel kind of old, because I'm like, really? It's been, wow, I did not, okay. And I was not actually like a child when the last one came out. Which is Incredibles and Incredibles 2.
14 years, yeah.
I know, and I mean...
I read that somewhere, too, and I thought, no, it's been like 5.
Well, I mean, I know that, you know, animated films take longer than films you can shoot live action because you've got to do all the animation. So I was like, okay, fine, so it's been 9, right? Like, I know it's been a little longer than we... Wait, what? It's been what? I don't know how to feel about this. And people who were like actually children when the first one came out are not children anymore.
I was still in my 20s when it came out. Wow.
What's going on here? But I mean, okay, so I feel, and maybe this is not true statistically, but I'm just going to say it is because it's how I feel. Of all the Pixar films, Incredibles was the one people wanted a sequel for most.
I feel like that too. I mean, at least that's...
It was the one I wanted a sequel to.
I see that the most as when they announced it, people just were so excited. So, yeah.
I didn't care about... I haven't even seen either of the Cars sequels. I didn't feel we needed Cars sequels, but oh, I wanted an Incredibles sequel just to continue. And this one is interesting because it picks up almost exactly where we left off at the end of the last one, which is the Underminer. Right. And that guy who does a voice in every Pixar film.
He's their mascot. That's what they call him.
But I feel it should have been Wally Shawn. Like, he's in a number of them, and he was in The Incredibles, but I'm like, I need you to be in all of them because.
But it's the guy from Cheers, not Norm, the other guy. You're way too young.
I was about to say, nope, got nothing. Mm-hmm. So anyways, in this one, it picks up where they left off, dealing with the Underminer, who's come out from under the ground, and handling of that does not go super good. I actually think it goes pretty fine, but it's kind of hard to figure out a way that they could do anything with these, you know, supervillains with big machines that doesn't involve, like, lots of destruction of the city.
Well, but that's the case with every superhero movie.
But that's part of why people were upset. That's why, you know, they were made illegal in the flashback in the first one. And that hasn't changed, even though they did the whole thing on the island. They're actually technically still illegal, which I completely forgot about.
Right.
And so when they do the Underminer thing and it doesn't really work out well, it's like, you know, law's still broken, go off into hiding. Someone happens to see them who's like, I want to rebrand superheroes so superheroes can come back and not be illegal anymore. But we're going to do it with Elastigirl because Mr. Incredible is just kind of destructive. That's basically what we go with. And so that's where you get in the trailer about Mom's new job.
Right.
Is she's going to be sort of the face of this campaign of, see, this is why we loved supers to begin with.
And now he's Mr. Mom.
Kind of. Yeah.
It's so really she goes dating off me because that's a very old movie.
It really is. I'm not even sure I was alive when that movie came out.
You probably weren't.
But that's part of the thing with The Incredibles, especially if you remember from the first one, where it's like, it's not quite clear when it's set, clothing-wise and some of the, like, you know, TV stuff-wise. It looks like we're in the 60s or maybe the 70s. But then, like, you've got these really cool, like, fast jets and, you know, technology things that we don't even have now. So it's like, you're just picking and choosing from decades here, Pixar, fine. that continues even more so in this one, where at one point they like save someone, these like three girls who look like they're wearing like those poofy 50s dresses, you know, mm-hmm. with the
like a poodle skirt or a crinoline.
Crinolines, yeah. I was gonna say petticoats. that's the wrong 50s. but then like there's the, you know, really high speed jet and the car you can call with the remote control. So yeah.
So it's like the 60s, only it's, you know, the Jetsons were technically made in the 60s. So it's
kind of. Yeah.
I don't know how you would really even frame that. But
I feel that that's part of where the Mr. Mom storyline comes in, because that's dealing with a number of gender things. He really wants her to take this job, this position, and go out and be the face of supers so supers can stop being illegal to be a superhero so that he can get back to being a superhero. That's kind of really his driving motive, is you need to go out and do a good job so I can go out and do a good job.
Right.
But at the same time, then he's left at home with the kids, and it's going back to that whole, oh, fathers don't know how to take care of their kids thing, as we're recording the day before Father's Day.
Yeah.
And, you know, women outside the house, I'm like, I know you like half the time look like you're from the 60s, but that conflict is a little... Okay.
It's like when, but even still, I mean, you still get things like, oh, you babysitting your kids?
Yes.
He's their dad. He's not babysitting, right. You know, so we still unfortunately have a ways to go in terms of that gender stereotype.
But I mean, I think it also, it's played well to see why we pick her instead of him, even if you haven't seen the first one.
Because she's more level-headed than he
is.
Well,
there is that. But also, you see, as they're dealing with the Underminer, he's very much sort of focused on the problem. The Underminer has this big drill that drills up through the street, and we've got to stop that. And she's more focused on people. So it's like, oh, we've got to stop the train that's been, you know, knocked off the rails. And, oh, we've got to protect those people. And who's watching the baby?
Right.
Whereas he's all about, like, this is the issue, and we've got to deal with this thing. And what, there are people in the way? Oh, I don't think about that.
Right. He's a little more single-focused, single-minded.
That's still playing into that whole gender thing. And it's just like, yeah, but, okay, this is 2018. Okay, moving on, just because I really actually like her, and I'm perfectly fine if you want to put her more front and center in the fight. By all means, go ahead. It's just, it's still Pixar. It's been 14 years, but if you don't know that, it doesn't really feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling someone, I was like, in a few years' time, when we have both of these on DVD and like the kids want to watch both of them, if you didn't know there was a 14 years difference, you wouldn't know there was a 14 years difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they haven't really lost any of that, whatever made The Incredibles great. That's all pretty much still there.
Cool.
And it's still very much, I was going to say it's for adults. I saw this with a pretty full theater we don't go to the movies too much anymore. Really full theater. Of course, a lot of kids, because it was opening weekend. And I was like, ugh. Bunch of kids in a movie theater. But it actually was not that bad. There were a few young kids that did cry, but they were taken out pretty well. And I was well distracted by the movie to the point that that didn't bother me.
Okay.
And the movie does a lot of things really good, including Jack-Jack. Because if you've seen, I won't spoil it if you haven't seen the first one, but if you've seen the first one, Jack-Jack is their baby, the youngest, and we do something with his character at the end of the first one, which was almost like 80% of why I wanted a sequel, because that had so much potential.
Right.
We just go for it in this film. Like, almost all my favorite scenes are with Jack-Jack in this one, including, as I was telling you and your husband, there's a scene with a raccoon.
Right.
Possibly my favorite scene. It's sort of the first major scene with Jack-Jack and the whole potential about Jack-Jack. And it is the proper way of dealing with a raccoon. I will just say that. When you see the film, you will know what I'm talking about. That is, if you have the ability, the only way to deal with raccoons. But there's at one point a line in this, and if you've seen the trailers, you can, you know, sort of see what's going on with Jack-Jack. There's at one point a line in this where... Bob, Mr. Incredible, the father, is talking to his two older kids about Jack-Jack. And at one point he goes, no firing the baby around the house. Just so you know, that is in there. That will come up. That's a thing.
Nice.
It's just like, I love every scene Jack-Jack's in. I kind of just want Pixar to, I don't even know if you could do this, but just create a series of shorts about Jack-Jack, like the adventures of Jack-Jack. I need that. I need more Jack-Jack.
I don't see why they couldn't do that.
Right. And the short that opened this was actually pretty cool. It's evidently the first Pixar short directed by a woman. And it's about a Chinese woman who creates a dumpling, which is called a bao in China. And so the short's called Bao, and the dumpling comes to life, and it's really adorable, as you kind of expect Pixar shorts to be, but it's also dealing with, you know, some real family themes, as again, you kind of expect Pixar shorts to be in the way the Chinese woman deals with the bao at one point, shortly before we reveal something, was just like, the reaction in my audience was just like, oh my gosh! But then you see what really, but yeah. The reactions, watching this with an audience, I think is really fun. Mm-hmm. Because again, all the scenes with Jack-Jack got really big responses because they're really funny. There's the one point in the, you see in the trailer where Jack-Jack's chewing on the remote and then he disappears. And we only get him to come back by saying Cookie Num Num. That continues in the film. And he's like, so wait, the baby can hear you from the other dimension. It's just like, wait.
Nice.
And you get Edna back in this,
yes,
who is voiced actually by the director Brad Bird. She's great in this as her, as what we do with her. I'm just like, Adventures of Edna and Jack-Jack. Can we do that? Can that be made
a thing?
Because I need that. I like
Adventures of Edna and Jack-Jack. Sorry, I went to a place because she's just so like deadpan and cynical, and Jack-Jack can be like,
combustion imminent. What does that mean? It means fire, Robert. Yeah, it was great. I feel in that same way that Pixar animation films often feel made almost equally for adults as for kids.
Yes,
there's that in this, to the point that the villain is kind of obvious if you are of a certain age and able to see certain hints.
Okay.
So the children will probably not figure out who the villain was. I was able to figure out who the villain was pretty quickly.
Okay.
Because they give it away in that sort of sneaky, hinty, Easter egg-y sort of way. Which, of course, there are. And again, I miss them because I always miss them until they're pointed out of me. Out at me.
Out of me.
Jack-Jack. Anyways. There are some, like, I think Cars and Toy Stories and other things, Easter eggs in this that I completely missed. But I got the villain one, so I feel kind of proud about that. It's still with the villain. Of all the things in the film, I feel the villain part was the, not even the worst, because it's still pretty good, but it's not as good as everything else.
It's just not your favorite parts. It's not.
Well, because it's kind of confusing. So.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just the whole setup with Elastigirl, who's made to be the sort of poster child that I'm not even sure how that works, because she's still, like, superheroes are still illegal.
Right.
But they want to make it legal by showing, hey, Elastigirl is a good superhero who saves people and doesn't destroy half the city. So we should bring supers back. By having her just be out there saving people, even though that's still while she's doing it illegal, to the point where she's talking with the PR team, whatever, who came up with this idea, while sitting out in public in an outfit with a mask on a motorcycle, and nobody like reacts.
Right.
I think they're in Chicago or something like that, and she's just sitting out in the middle of the city, like watching this. It's a ribbon cutting for a like high speed hover train or something.
Again, what era are we in?
Right? I don't know. While talking, I mean, so the villain in this is called the Screen Slaver and can hack into screens and send a signal that hypnotizes people.
Screen Slaver.
Why is
I'm
that?
Sorry, I don't know why that's so hilarious. I think it's just because, I don't know. I don't know.
But at one point,
I'm tired.
When we first get introduced to the Screen Slaver and he hacks into the screens that they're reading off of when they're interviewing Elastigirl to like speak through the reporter who's interviewing her, she goes running to one of her PR people who's helping her do this and is like, what happened? And the PR person's like, somehow the signal got hacked. And I'm like, the signal got hacked? What decade is this? Like, looking at the camera, it's that one of those big cameras where they looked at, like, almost a TV screen as they were shooting it.
Oh,
and it
right,
has the,
yeah.
The rotating lenses to zoom in instead of just zooming.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, so I feel we cannot possibly be any closer to nowadays than like 1972, but the signal got hacked? What? And then at one point you see she has to go save an ambassador who's traveling on one of really three really cool like hover helicopter jets. And I'm like, you have the old TV screen camera, but the signal got hacked and they're on the hover helicopter. What year is this?
I think that's the point.
I mean, yeah, it's clearly, it's obviously not a real world. There aren't supers here and we haven't made supers illegal. But yeah, so there's that whole thing with Elastigirl. She's offered this chance and they move into the house provided by the PR team while she goes out and saves the world. But they're all very cavalier about whether or not they have secret identities.
Okay. So
as she's sitting out in public, you know, watching this ribbon cutting because they think some crime might happen, she's talking about, man, my husband used to listen to police scanners and I used to get on. And I'm like, okay, but you're mentioning your do they know that you're married to Mr. Incredible? Because I don't feel we really revealed that, but you're just saying it like they already do. You or do you not have secret identities? I'm confused. Like, if you do have secret identities, you're the worst at hiding your secret identities ever, because you're talking with these people like they and you're living in their house and you know they have cameras because she's been told there's a camera on her suit. Mm-hmm. So that they can see what she sees, so that's part of the PR thing, to see how supers are great.
Right.
Is to see it from her point of view instead of just the after effects of the destruction. So she knows there's a camera, but we're still like calling our husband Bob and not Mr. Incredible, and we're living in their house with our kids. So they do all know who you are, or they don't know who you are. Like, everything that starts happening with the PR team and then with the villain that the PR team and she are dealing with, I'm just like, I'm a little confused on what you all know and what you all don't know. But move on. Go back to Jack-Jack, because that was just great.
let's just keep Jack-Jack in every scene.
I mean, we get a number of scenes with him. We get the scene with the raccoon, and then we get the scene with Edna, and then we get the scenes later with everyone together, and I'm just like, A, on the one hand, I love this baby. On the other hand, that baby's going to be a terror growing up. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You cannot punish him ever. Like, just, I don't know what you would do. But yeah, it was fun. It was funny. It didn't feel like it'd been 14 years. Pixar, you know, didn't miss a step almost. They jumped right back into literally where they left off. And it was just as good as the first one. Like, quality-wise, I could very easily double feature this and not feel there was any difference in quality whatsoever.
Nice.
So, great,
like,
movie.
Yeah, it's on my list. I'm gonna see it, you know, someday, like 30 years from now, when I get around to seeing all the movies that I keep saying I'm gonna see.
Well, when you do get around, just remember, this is how you deal with raccoons. That's
okay.
All I'm saying.
Okay.
We're gonna take a short break. Stay tuned.
Watching TV has changed over time. Streaming has become the new norm. That's why Golden State Media Concepts Television Podcast dives headfirst to the world of cord cutting. Want to be on the loop of what's hot in Netflix? Or if it's not a preference, what about original shows in Hulu? We've got you covered. Join us as we fill in the blanks and talk about movies to stream and what show you should be binging. This is the Golden State Media Concepts Television Podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Our second film, I picked solely along this theme of...
The steam?
Did I say steam?
I don't know. It sounded like you said steam, but I understand the theme. I get it.
This theme,
yes.
Of, hey, let's follow the woman instead.
Oh, okay.
Her action-y story. This is the film The Villainess, which is a Korean film.
Okay, that's why I've never heard of it. You and your Korean obsession.
Well, no, see, this was actually at the Cannes Film Festival, though I couldn't tell you what year because years start getting funny when you get to film festivals. Mm. It was last year, but it's only just coming out now. And yeah, so right. I watched this on DVD. It was at the Cannes Film Festival, either 2017 or 2016. Korean film, that's all I've got. But anyways, Okay. So this film is about a woman who is trained to be a sort of assassin killer person.
Uh-huh.
But then she's kind of assigned to assassinate someone that sort of messes with her plans, and everything goes crazy, and we have to deal with that.
Okay.
It's the reactions of this were pretty good, but some were kind of mixed, and I think part of that is because it almost feels like two different films. Because the action scene, when you first start the film, is shot very much in a sort of first-person video game scene. So you're seeing everything from her perspective as she's going through this building, killing everyone.
Okay.
And the...
like, almost like she's wearing a GoPro.
Kind of, yeah. Or if you were playing a video game.
Right.
And there's a scene involving her fighting a bunch of people in a hallway, which made me think of the scene from the hallway in Old Boy. And I'm like, what's with Korean films and violence in hallways? That's only two, but it just
feels two, that's a theme.
Right. But then, so that happens at the beginning, and that happens at the end, but then in the middle, it's shot like sort of a regular movie. So it's like, we were in a video game, and then we get knocked out of the video game. And even when we're not in, like, from her perspective, the action scenes are still shot really strangely for me.
Okay.
Because, and I watched the little sort of behind-the-scenes special they have on the DVD, but I'm so glad I watched it because it made me feel, aha, I know what I'm talking about. Because before I watched it, I thought, the action scenes are filmed almost as if Spider-Man was filming them.
Okay.
And Spider-Man was like...
like Spider-Man himself was filming them? Like flying about in the...
Right. Okay. Hanging upside down from a web as they're fighting. Which is kind of actually what the director did. The camera person was also on wires as the actors were on wires, you know, falling down buildings or whatever. So he's getting knocked about as the main character played by Kim Ok-bin is getting knocked about. So at times it's like, I have no idea... I almost know what's going on in the action scenes, but the camera's flailing about so much that I'm not sure I do. I have to wait till we get back to a shot I can recognize before I can figure out whether or not I followed
this
that.
This movie is kind of making me want to throw up, and I haven't even seen it.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing. That's the beginning and the end action scenes. And then in the middle, it almost becomes not quite a romance.
What?
Because you find out that the opening scene is actually... later, and then we go back in time and we start doing this forward and backward jumping thing, which is confusing at first because when we start the film, she has short hair, and in both the present and past time, she has short hair.
Mm-hmm.
But then as we go along in the present, her hair gets longer, so then it's easier to tell when we're in the past or not.
Okay.
But when we start, she both has short hair, so I'm like, is this happening now or did this happen previously? She's evidently been trained to kill twice.
Oh, because the first time didn't take?
No, actually, because it did. So when she was a child, her father was killed.
Uh-huh.
And she is taken in by a man and brought up to be a killer because she wants to take revenge on the person who killed her father. But then something happens where we get to the opening scene where she kills pretty much everyone in this building and then gets taken in by the authorities. And there's a secret, I don't know if it's part of the government or just a secret company on its own that trains women to be killers. And happens to have somehow seen her in action and is like, hey, she'd be a good asset. Let's take her in and make her part of the company. So she gets trained all over again to be a killer. But she's already been trained, so she's like super good. She's like the best killer in this. I almost want to call it a boarding school. Well, no, because it's several girls. It's all women, at least this training part. And they're in a building and they stay there. They live there. They take cooking lessons and acting lessons.
So it's not only a boarding school, it's almost like a finishing school.
Right? They learn to cook, act, do their makeup, and also fight and kill. I almost,
well, because,
the fighting,
you know,
and killing part, I kind of actually want to go to this boarding school company training, what have you thing.
Right. But, you know, if you've ever watched any assassin in a movie, especially female ones, they always, you know, are dressed to the nines and doing all this stuff. So you got to know how to do your makeup in a good way.
Well, yeah. And the thought process is that the girls, once they, I'm going to go with graduate, are then sent out into the real world undercover as just regular people until they're given an assignment to kill. And then they go off and do their assignment and then come back to their regular job. And you do this for 10 years and then you're allowed to have a regular life.
Oh.
So the main character, Suki, she gets out of the school really early, even before some of the girls who were there before her do, because she's already gotten like half this training. Mm-hmm. And she actually was pregnant when she was brought into the school. So they give her the choice of, you know, if you don't take our option, you'll die, but you should live for your baby. We'll let you keep your baby. And then in 10 years, you can have a regular life with your kid.
Oh.
So she takes the option.
So what happens to the kid in the meantime? You're just living, like, hoping you don't get killed?
Well, it's super weird because while she's at the school, the baby's still there. But at one point, the baby's, like, just lying on a bed while she's off doing fighting training. And I'm like, what happened in the, first year or so when this was a newborn? Who was watching the baby?
Who's watching the baby? Well, if it's a one-year-old, who's watching the baby? So doesn't just roll off the bed?
It's not quite clear. I mean, there's cameras all over this school, so presumably someone's literally watching the baby.
But that doesn't do any good if you're three floors above in the security room and the baby's like, oh, something hot, let me touch it.
She does. The baby lives just fine while at the school. We leave with the baby. She goes off. Her cover is that she's an actress. Okay.
Okay.
And she meets a neighbor who's kind of dorky, but starts to grow on her.
Like a fungus.
No. So she wants to have this regular life with the neighbor who, unknown to her, but known to the audience, is actually part of the company.
Sure.
But he, while she was at the company training, kind of fell in love with her while watching her.
Uh-huh.
So it seems he almost like volunteered for this role to pretend to be her neighbor and to keep an eye on her, even though we've got cameras in her apartment, so we can keep an eye on her anyways.
Right.
She doesn't know he's part of the company. She thinks he's a widower and his wife died. She starts to fall in love with him and she wants to get married.
Okay.
She asks her company for permission to do this. They agree, not telling her he works for the company.
That's a good way to start a marriage. Lots and lots of lies.
Well, and continuing, on her wedding day, she is given an assignment to kill someone from the bathroom of the place where she's getting married, which creates this beautiful shot that you saw in some of the promotional period of her in a wedding dress with a rifle.
Oh,
it's a great shot.
Sure.
It's a great shot, but it turns out that the person she is supposed to kill is someone from her past, and that starts bringing all these different things to light. Wait a minute. She knows who he is. The company doesn't necessarily know that she knows who he is. They don't know about that connection. So she doesn't kill this person, but she's starting now to question the company.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
as you do.
Well, I mean, I would hope you would before you... but anyway.
I mean... as you do in movies like this.
Yes.
Generally.
So in looking this up, there was a part even before I saw what other people thought about it that I was like, this feels a lot like Kill Bill. There's a scene involving the young her under a bed that feels a lot like a scene in Kill Bill. I was like, oh man, this, oh wow.
I can't remember if I've actually seen all of Kill Bill or if I've only seen parts of it.
I have seen all of it and yeah, I don't dislike it, but Quentin Tarantino is not quite my style.
No, and mine either.
This evidently is also quite a bit like La Femme Nikita, but I haven't seen
I've heard of
any version of that.
Yeah, me either.
I think there's a French one and an American one, and then there was a TV show. I saw like two episodes of the TV show and that's it. But it supposedly has a lot to do. It's very similar in many ways to that storyline, I guess.
Okay.
I can definitely see the Kill Bill references, which other people did bring up. That definitely comes up quite a bit. And there's a lot of sort of secrets going on with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Except you don't quite, at the end, really find out who the company is or who this person from the past is. And I'm a little annoyed at the end that that's still like, we're just never going to get that resolved and who that person is and why the company wanted to kill that person. Okay, fine.
No, it's just a mystery.
Yes. So I'm not quite sure why this film is called The Villainess. I didn't look up if that's the actual literal translation of the Korean title.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Korean titles are translated very strangely. I'm not quite sure why. But sure. You actually really kind of, I at least am very much rooting for her. And she goes through a lot emotionally. Like, this is not an easy story for her. She's never really in a good situation throughout the whole film.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're in the past or present, it's just like, man, your situation sucks like almost all the time. Gosh darn it. But yeah, there's a scene involving another girl from her company that I was like, oh, I can already, even when we got into the scene, I was like, this is not going to end well. I can already tell.
This is going to end in tears.
This is not going to end well. But I was rooting for her, even though I know she's going to be pissed when she finds out her future husband is from the company.
Right.
I was really rooting for them. I really liked him. You can tell he really cares about her. There is a scene involving a bus and him running for a bus that I was like almost, A, I kind of want to cry, and B, I kind of want to marry you. Like, that was really sweet. I love you, you adorable dorky person.
Aww.
But you can already tell, you know, marriage built on lies that also involves assassins.
Right.
This is not going to end well.
Although, you know, it is and it isn't built on lies, because he actually knows, but she doesn't know that he knows.
Well, she feels really bad because she thinks she's lying to him.
Right, exactly.
That started getting confusing. He thinks she's just an actress whose husband is away on a business trip, to the point that when she, like, they start kind of dating, she feels bad because she thinks he thinks she's married. There's too many she thinks in that.
Right.
But anyways, so in the middle, I found a lot of people actually didn't like the middle. The middle was the part I liked the most, just because I'm wanting her to get, you know, past this and to have a good life with her child.
Mm-hmm.
I want her to still be in this relationship with this guy, even though I know she's going to find out that he's lying to her and that's not going to end well.
Right.
When we get to the wanting a regular life, having the romance angle, I'm really in it. But then, and since this movie was created almost with the purpose of, let's see if we can do action movies in a different way, hence the shot by Spider-Man aspect to it.
Right.
We, of course, have to get back to action. So we get the final action. We get back to action with the, you know, the last 20 minutes or so. And I'm just like, and back to the, I'm not quite sure what's happening here. There's a scene, and this is in the trailer, where she's like riding on the hood of a car.
Like you do, yeah.
But
okay.
She's steering the car herself. She's got her hand through, I think she kicked the windshield out or something. She's got her hand on the steering wheel as she's sitting on the hood trying to drive the car to someone. And that looks cool in the trailer until you realize, you get in the film and you realize it's not because there's like a dead person, you know, pushed on the gas pedal. There's nobody else in the car. How is that car accelerating? Just like, wait a minute. Because she's trying to catch up to something to catch up to the bad guys. And I was like, that looks cool, but I'm so taken out that I'm questioning like the science of that. But then you do get the scene, because maybe it's having again to do with the Spider-Man shooting aspect. This is what we were thinking of action-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Both the bookend opening and closing fight scenes are enclosed spaces most of the time. So the opening scene, a good number of times, is in hallways or in rooms. The end scene is in a bus.
Oh.
They're fighting on a bus. And there's actually a scene in the middle involving fighting on motorcycles with swords that I can see why, like, that concept was, hey, that would be a really cool action scene to shoot.
Right.
But like the riding on the car thing, I'm like, okay, but physics, you all would have like been knocked off balance a number of times with the, you all should have crashed by now.
Right.
I am taken out of this. When we get to the bus scene, I'm better in it than the that's not physically how balance works motorcycle scene. But because we've now gotten back to, oh, this is being shot by Spider-Man, I'm confused half the time. I can't quite tell what's going on in the action scenes. It's not quite to the, I feel I'm going to be sick dizziness level, but it is to the, I bet this is a really cool scene and she's probably kicking a lot of butt, but I can't quite tell what she's doing and or who she just killed. So,
First I was nauseous, now I'm confused. This is a very interesting sounding movie.
Again, I like the middle. I like when we get to the actual drama of I'm lying, you're lying, we're all lying. But since it's an action movie about the action scenes,
I'm assuming there's subtitles.
Yes.
So you're trying to read and pay attention to everything that's going on and doing all that. Well, does that get confusing ever?
It's not confusing to me. And the version I had from Netflix, you could actually have it dubbed as well. Mm-hmm. But I don't like dubbing, so I went with subtitles.
Right.
It didn't throw me off. And maybe that's partly because I'm into Korea and I'm into Korean things. So there's a number of things where I'm used to the sound. So even without the subtitles, I can kind of guess what they've just said based mm-hmm. off of the familiarity of the sounds. It wasn't hard, and there's not too much talking during the fight scenes, so you're not thrown off then, and when there is talking, we're not moving that much. So it's still
okay.
pretty good.
Okay.
If you're not into Korean culture, you might not get some things, particularly the way people address each other. Mm-hmm. Because the girl she gets close to at the school calls her Unni, which is a word that a female calls her older sister or someone she's close to like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls her first assassin trainer Ajushi, which is another title. But if you don't know those words, you're not going to understand it.
Right.
And so the way she and her neighbor, when they first start to get together, and she thinks he thinks she's married, so we can't, she's not supposed to get close because she doesn't know this person. And also it would kind of break her cover. They're addressing each other in a certain way, which is formal and which would be absolutely normal to Koreans, but is not normal to English people because that's not what we talk. We don't have a different way of speaking based off our formal level of knowing each other.
Uh-huh.
So that translation comes off a little strange if you're not used to that culture. If you don't know about the different levels of formality, it's just like, why do you keep calling them that? And what? Why are we talking in that way to each other if we're... Are we dating? I'm not quite sure. But again, I'm into Korean stuff, so it didn't throw me off because I already knew, you know, what sort of level of formality we were going at.
Okay.
Some people didn't... I'm really torn by the people who were like, oh, the middle gets so sloggy and slow. Why can't we get back to the action? I'm like, why do you want to get back to the action? You couldn't understand what was going on half of the time in the first part. I want to know about the story. I want to know if she's going to figure out, you know, all the different people who are lying to her and what's going on and be able to come out. But you're like, let's just get... And again, it was made to be different. They purposefully wanted to shoot a different type of action film. That was the whole purpose of it. The actress, Kim Ok-bin, does a really good job with the action. Mm-hmm. I actually think she does a really good job with the more drama aspects of it as well. Until we start getting to the revealing of everything, of revealing who's been lying to who and what's going on. Korean acting tends to take that sort of level into a very dramatic place that feels sort of fake mm-hmm. to Americans, like overacting. That's just very typical for them, so it seems normal. But that was the one part that threw me out, because I'm like, yeah, that still feels overacty. I get that, you know, your whole life you've just found out it's kind of a lie, but... That's an interestingly strong reaction to have there. Okay. Move on.
Wow.
So, yeah, I liked the middle. I was into the beginning when we were in the point of view shot, just because I was like, that's interesting, but are you really going to shoot this whole film point of view? Oh, okay, thank you. You didn't, but right. The way you came out of point of view was also interesting. Okay. And then once we get past that, I'm like, oh, I like the fact that you're now, you know, just... in a camera shot that I can understand. Stay here. Yes. Oh, he's lying to her, but she's falling in love. Oh, yeah. Oh, we're going back to action. Okay. And then it ends in an interesting way. And I'm like, so is there going to be a, is that the end? Is there going to be a sequel? Was that the end? I'm just like, I don't quite know how to feel about that at the end. But I thought that...
I don't know how to feel about this movie just from the description.
I thought that the main actress and the guy who plays the company man who falls in love with her were really good.
Okay.
So, interesting film to see. It did get a good amount of buzz at whatever con year it was at.
Okay.
And the actress got a however long minute standing ovation.
Oh, cool.
But I can't remember if that was for this film or for a previous film she had been in that had been at con.
Mm.
One of the two.
But regardless, she's clearly a very good actress.
I think so.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Yes. Interesting film. I really now do want to look up the translation of that word because not quite sure why it's called the villainess of all things. Just like she kills people, but I'm rooting for her. She's not the bad guy in this. Everyone else is kind of the bad guy, but I'm really rooting for her. So is she the villainess or is the company woman? Who's the villainess? I need to go look that up. So we're going to get into on that note, so I can go figure out Korean words yet again. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.